our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Schwartz is so old school, he needs to know who he's going to leave on the bench in a tie game. So
I was waiting for that. That was good.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I think I finally understand how Julia Roberts felt in Pretty Woman. I feel like, coming on your guys' podcast, I feel like the classiest whore this side of Sunset Boulevard.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
We set the bar pretty high here at Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
We definitely make people feel like whores when they come on.
Exactly. It's definitely an honor and a privilege, and I'm looking forward to having sex with an old rich man at some point in the next hour.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 257 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
I'm good, man. Excited to talk some baseball. It's been a crazy season. I mean, we kind of talked off air about what some of the biggest storylines are for this year and the brief beginnings of it. We'll get to it on the show, but I'm just excited to talk baseball. It's a long day at work, and here we are.
Good. I'm glad to talk to you as well. I'm looking forward to kind of discussing some hot and cold players tonight, but we have a special guest tonight. It is our good friend, Jason Consoli of the Dear Mr. Fantasy podcast. Jason, how you doing?
So it's taken me about at least 20 years to finally understand like what this has meant, but I think I finally understand how Julia Roberts felt in Pretty Woman. I feel like, coming on your guys' podcast, I feel like the classiest whore this side of Sunset Boulevard. If that's if that gives you an insight into my feelings of being
we set the bar pretty high here at Friends with Fantasy.
We definitely make people feel like whores when they come on.
Exactly. It's definitely an honor and a privilege, and I'm looking forward to having sex with an old rich man at some point in the next hour.
I just wanted to throw this public service announcement out there for me. I'm not a people person at all. And my work is throwing, this might be my last podcast ever because I might die, because they're sending me to, if people don't know, I work with trains, that's my living, and they're sending me to a commuter for the week, so I have to deal with passengers that are trying to get to work in the morning, so it's not going to be fun. I might end up killing someone, or vice versa.
Yeah, I work with people for a living, and I don't like people, so you get used to it.
Yeah.
Friends with Fantasy Benefits, we get whores and we get disgruntled employees, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. With a little bit of fantasy baseball sprinkled in there as well.
Yeah, every now and then.
we turn guests into whores and we hate people.
Yes.
It's a good tagline.
Yeah. Jason, give us a 5-star review.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely. Jason, why don't you tell people where you can reach on social media and then give yourself some plugs because you do a lot of cool things.
Absolutely. So hit me up on Twitter at Fantasy Six Man. Come check out the Dear Mr. Fantasy podcast. It's kind of like what you guys do over here, just not even nearly in a ballpark of as good as what you guys do. But no, you might have heard some of our co-hosts, Yancey Eaton and the new guy on the block. We like to bust his chops that he's the only Miami Marlins fan in the history of the world, Mike Yavnielli. We're a part of the Dear Mr. Fantasy podcast. You may have remembered that from the days back with Chris McBrien and Joe Pisapia. We took it over late last year, kind of put our spin on it, kept some things going that Chris kept on and that Joe brought to the table. And it's a fun time. You know, we have some interesting guests on. I'm sure, you know, you guys will be more than frequent guests on the podcast as the season goes on. But check it out. It's on Stitcher, iTunes, SoundCloud, anywhere that you guys get your podcast. Check out my book on Amazon.com. It's called Please Set Your Lineups, 5 Steps to Being the World's Best Fantasy Sports Commissioner. For any guys out there that run fantasy sports leagues, you know how much of a pain in the ass it is to be a commissioner, and you probably hear a whole litany of complaints. Check out my book. It just shows you some fun stories that I've experienced throughout the years from playing in fantasy sports leagues, from being commissioners of them. And the best part, it's only 99 cents. And last but not least, check out FantasySixMan.com. Look, everybody out there has been in leagues. We're midway during the season, halfway during the season. You just people in your leagues, they just stop checking their teams. They stop setting their lineups. It causes a headache for everybody. And, you know, a couple of years ago, we came up with a solution. So go to fantasysixman.com. Check out our owner replacement service. What we do, they go in there. They'll set your lineups for you. They'll check for injuries. They'll even respond to trade offers for any number of teams in your leagues at any point in the season, just so things stay competitive. And as they like to say, they're the first ones off the bench. So now that I'm totally feeling like a whore, let's start talking about some fantasy baseball, guys.
Definitely, let's do that. We're gonna start with some hot players, and then we'll finish the show with some cold players. Marcell Ozuna absolutely crushing it to start the year. Jason, are you a Marcell Ozuna fan?
Well, I am, but to an extent. I mean, I think that this is, first and foremost, this is a much, 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 much different player than we saw 2 years ago when he got sent down to the minors, you know? So this is definitely somebody who, coming into the year, I had on my, like, watch list in the terms of that, he was building off an all-star campaign. He had a career high in home runs. And if you look at what he's doing this year, there's a lot of encouraging sign. His walk rate is up to a career high, basically, for him. He's cutting down on his strikeouts. But, I mean, the guy's hitting .404 with a BABIP of .438. I think you got to expect that to regress just a tad. So I think that he's definitely somebody that you're going to want on your team. If he's your third outfielder, you did a great job with that. I think that, you know, if you want to try to sell high on him, I'm not sure necessarily what you're going to get. I don't think that he's giving you enough that you're going to get like a top 10. Like, you're not going to get like a Starling Marte for him. I think you're going to have to settle in with him into that next tier of outfielders, like maybe like an Adam Eaton. And then at the same time, that's kind of the production that he's going to wind up giving you the rest of the season anyway. So I like him, and I think you just could stand pat with him right now.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Marcell Ozuna?
It's kind of the cop-out answer. I like him, but not enough to invest long-term in him. There's a few reasons why here. I mean, I don't know if you remember Osuna's May he had in 2016. Mm-hmm. In case you didn't, 411, 450, 705. That's eerily similar to what he's doing right now in April. And if you subtract that that May out of his 2016 season, he pretty much replicated his kind of disappointing 2015 campaign, which he was sent down for the minors for a lot of different reasons. And one of them was the blatant manipulation of his service time by the Marlins. So don't forget that. They wanted to, you know, he's conveniently missed getting a Super 2 deadline by a day because of what they did with when they sent him down. Weird, huh? The thing with him is I think he's going to take a step forward this year. And obviously his April is kind of alluding that. I mean, you're seeing what Jason went over, the BABIP and the batting average, and the ISO right now is at .340, which is insane. A couple things working against him for me. I don't like the ballpark. I know Osuna's got the type of power where he can hit out of anywhere. But that ballpark still scares me. I'm going to, if going head to head with a lot of other outfielders, I would probably choose them just because of the ballpark. He's not going to get you anything in the steals department, despite being a center fielder for so long. He's finally moved to the corner. He's only 26 years old and he doesn't run anymore. So I think what you're getting now, you kind of have to sell high just because what is the ultimate upside? I think it's 35 home runs, but I think he's going to settle into the 265, 270 range for batting average, nowhere near the .404. I mean, you're probably banked his best month you're going to get all year. And I'm fully confident in guaranteeing that. And I know the easy answer is it only goes downhill from here, but it does. And a couple of long-term things here is he could get traded any minute just because the Marlins, I mean, look at the organization, the minor league system is as empty as it gets. He's a Scott Boras guy. So he's not going to sign a cheap team-friendly deal. So he's always on the verge of getting moved. He's their most tradable asset that they have. That's realistic. They're not moving Yelich. He signed that team-friendly deal. Real Muto is not going anywhere. And Stanton, obviously, with that contract, isn't going anywhere. So Osuna's the only one left. Trades can affect players in multiple ways. You always have to assume they're not going to hit as well immediately after a trade. You know, just a lot of moving parts going on with all that. So I'm cautiously optimistic, but I'll let someone else – I'll gladly be wrong on him this year, having a good year, but it's going to be on someone else's teams. Because I think the upside is essentially gone after this big month.
Hey, yeah. Matt, I had a quick question for you. You mentioned Christian Yelich. That was actually a guy who I was very high on going into the season.
I like Yelich a lot too.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like I've talked before with Yancey about this. I feel like he's a guy that at some point in his career is going to win a batting title.
I think so too. I'm with you.
Yeah, and well, my question is this, and you mentioned a ballpark down there in Miami, which I've been to, and it's weird because the minute you walk in there, it feels like it's like almost like an ice hockey arena because it's so hot outside, and they have to pump the AC in there, and it's just a weird atmosphere. But
you kind of get that feeling from watching it on TV. I know that sounds weird, but
it just looks like it's like you expect them to drop a puck and just you know play ball. But you mentioned Ozuna. The ballpark doesn't really like he's a guy that could hit 35 home runs in any ballpark just because of the power there. But, you know, it's not favorable to hit for power in a ballpark like where they play in. Do you feel that way with Yelich, too? Because like Yelich, I feel like I don't know if he's ever going to hit the point where he's going to get over like 25 home runs in a season. Is that?
Yeah, I think Yelich's issue for me, I mean, isn't the ballpark.
It's his
swing. I don't think because. It's a swing, yeah. He had I don't have the numbers off the top of my head. It was like the second longest average fly ball distance of any Major League Baseball player last year, which is kind of insane looking at Yelich's frame and stuff. But he also hit the second fewest amount of fly balls. So I think, like you said, the swing that kind of lends him to that batting title kind of future that we kind of think he has is because it's more line drive, more ground ball, more double in the gap, not home runs.
Right.
So I think that puts a ceiling on Yelich, but I do think Yelich could easily hit 320 for a couple seasons.
Easily, yes.
Yeah,
yeah. I think Yelich is one of those guys that, like you said, could challenge for a batting title at some point. His swing isn't built for power. I mean, he could if he wanted to. I'm sure he could sell out for power and become that kind of guy that we tend to gravitate towards. But I think his swing is so sweet. It's like, why change it?
Yeah, it's like Mark Teixeira pre-Yankees.
And you forget how young he is. I mean, Yelich is like 24, I believe. That's kind of crazy.
Yelich is 25. He's 25. In terms of Ozuna, though, I agree with you, Matt, in terms of the fact that I think that this may be his best month out of the year. I don't know what you could sell him for, though, is my only issues. And there's definitely obviously things.
There's a lot of desperate teams out there with that 10-day DL that have injured players.
I don't think Ozuna is one of those guys that you can necessarily sell high that easily. I mean, what are you really going to get for him? Like Jason mentioned, 438 BABIP, a little bit out of control. What I saw, he has a 51.4% hard hit percentage. And he's pulling the ball almost 50% of the time. I mean, these are things that, you know, are things that are obviously going to level out to some degree. Things I do like is he's swinging outside of the zone less often.
Yeah, that's good for him. He's always kind of had a wild approach.
And so tightened that up the last couple years. He's tightened that up. And that's I think that lends to what Jason was saying in terms of he's walking more. And if he's going to have a more discerning eye, I think that makes him a better all-around player. Is he a guy that I would sell right now? No, I think you just ride the streak. You set him and forget him. And I think instead of penciling in 25 home runs, like I think most people who were buying him this year were doing, I think you can maybe pencil in 30 or 30 plus.
Yeah, a couple of your peers on Fangraphs have predicted that. A couple of your peers on Rotographs predicted Ben Kaspic and Paul Sporer each, you know, kind of predicted big years from in their bold prediction articles. It's one of them's. Ben Kaspic said the Marlins would have the best offensive outfield, and Paul Sporer's bold prediction was Ozuna would hit 35 home runs.
And I wouldn't be surprised if that happened, especially with a five spot to start off the
year. But, I mean, it's worth knowing, Ozuna is one of the streakiest players in baseball. We talked about the big May, talked about this big April, the first half in general last year. 307, 360, 533, 377 WOBA, 137 WRC+. That's outstanding production. Second half, 264 WOBA, 61 WRC+. That's not. I think it might be just a case of young player not having his feet wet underneath him. But, I mean, I think if you catch a desperate owner, I mean, we talked about Yelich earlier. Maybe you can find a desperate Yelich owner because Yelich has been pretty terrible to start the season. I know it's only 2 weeks. I know. But like
the
I said,
I will say teams are injured. He's done the majority of his damage on the road. Or, sorry, at home.
Yeah.
In that large stadium.
Yeah, so. He's got the type of power that plays anywhere. So
yeah. I think you hold on to him, just ride it out, and know that there's going to be down points throughout the season, but just set it, forget it, and you'll be fine.
If I own
unless
those
I feel like the I almost feel like the trade that you have to do with Ozuna is you can get, since he's having like the hottest start of any hitter out there, I feel like you can get like a package of two other guys that are having hot starts. So you could give like a Marcelo Ozuna and like a throw in for like maybe, I don't know, like a Chris Owings and something else, something along that. Like, so if you have injuries, you can at least fill out some of the spots that you're missing players in, if that makes sense.
Okay, can we do a couple would you rather, if you don't
mind?
Yeah, I
got a list right here. Let's
okay, go ahead.
Let's start with some other positions, like Jason said, maybe you got some injuries you need to improve someone else. Do you think I should probably just double check what Ozuna's ADP was coming into the
189.
Season.
It's 125. Oh, whoa. Sorry. I had 125 on ESPN. That's
and
what
FBC is 189.
All right, I'm going to go off of that. So, also at 189, Dansby Swanson. Would you do that? Or I think you got to aim higher, right?
Yeah, you got to aim higher.
I'll keep Ozuna. Okay.
Would you do Ozuna for Elvis Andrus?
Not straight up. You'd have to give me something else.
Yep.
Really? Because I think I'd be okay with that.
I'm not an Andrus guy.
Aledmys
so.
Diaz.
That I would probably do because
I'm high on Diaz.
Yeah,
well, I watch Diaz play a lot. I like the swing, line drive approach. Dude knows what he's doing at the plate. I would go Diaz, but it also
with
the caveat that if you need five outfielders or three, or you know what I mean, there's a lot of depth issues there. I'd probably take Russell over Ozuna just because of the lineup he's in, and
I would too.
Yep.
But do you think you could get that deal done? Because I mean, coming into today. Russell's hitting .250. He's got one home run and one stolen base.
He's not walking, period.
But
so maybe that's now. Let's move over to closer because we're going to talk about some closers later on. But there's been already some shuffling around at the closer position. Do you think you could get and would you want AJ Ramos, his teammate?
No, too many other options in Miami.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Juris Familia.
Yes, I'll take Familia.
That's a really interesting name because he's set to come back now, isn't he? Like,
mm-hmm.
is it in
about a week or so, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's a nice buy low opportunity because I think that guy, once he comes back, that's like 30 saves in the bag.
What about David Robertson?
No, too much uncertainty with the future role. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm out on Robertson as well.
I guess here's some interesting names too. Ozuna was drafted around these outfielders: Adam Duvall, Kevin Kiermaier, Cole Calhoun were the three in front of him. The three behind him, Dexter Fowler, Rajay Davis, and Jock Peterson, with Enciarte behind them. I mean, does any of that do anything for you?
Just as a side note, I've seen leagues where Dexter Fowler is getting dropped already. Just stop it. Stop it.
I want to drop him from my real team.
So. I mean, don't panic. Don't panic.
I read an article today that said he's having trouble seeing the baseball. So that's
which is a problem.
That's not good.
Wait, what were those names again?
He was drafted right around, it was the three in front of him, Adam Duvall, Kevin Kiermaier, and Cole Calhoun, which I think I'd take Ozuna over all three of those
guys.
Yeah,
I'm taking Ozuna.
And then the three behind him were Fowler, Rajay Davis, and Jock Peterson, and then Enciarte is one behind them. I would take Enciarte over Ozuna.
I think I'm taking Ozuna over all of those guys.
Yeah, I think I'm taking Ozuna as well. The Enciarte one's close, especially if you play in those leagues where it designates like left field, center field,
and
right field.
I really like Jock Peterson.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're witnessing an Enciarte breakout this year, so that's why I just wanted to say. I like him a lot. I am irrational. The numbers aren't showing it now, but I've watched a lot of his at-bats, and they've looked pretty nice. He's hitting the ball hard. Showing a lot of power. The speed's going to play more, so I like Enciarte this year.
All right, well, let's move on to a different guy and talk about another guy who started out hot. That's Irvin Santana. Big Irv, just killing it right now in Minnesota. 22 innings pitched, a sub .5 ERA. He's got a .41 ERA. He's striking guys out at a decent clip. Any interest in Irvin Santana, Matt?
Sure. There's a lot of built-in safety here. I mean, he's a two-pitch guy with the fastball and the slider, and he knows how to mix in the changeup. He's a veteran, and he knows how to pitch. Velocity and the strikeout rate have held constant throughout pretty much his entire major league career, despite a PED suspension that he had to serve. I think you paid nothing for him on your draft price, and he's produced nothing but success for you. And I don't see any reason why to think he wouldn't, especially if you're in quality start format. You don't have to worry about the Twins being terrible and not getting wins, because I mean, Santana's keeping them in the ballgame the whole time. I'm not going out and trading for him or anything, but he's definitely would be a guy I would take in as a throw in a deal, because Big Irv is as solid as it gets right now. So I think pitchers like him are always underrated because they're older. And he obviously, in his case, he doesn't play for a good team. Strikeouts aren't really the big thing, but like if you compare him with a couple other high strikeout arms that are a lot more volatile than him, I mean, he keeps the ball in the yard, doesn't walk guys, hasn't his whole career. Like I said, two pitches, he knows what he's doing. Big ballpark, good defensive outfield with Buxton out there to suit his fly ball tendencies. I'm on Big Irv.
Jason, are you on Big Irv?
I mean, I like the start, but I don't think it's realistic to say that he's going to be able to sustain this. When you look, I mean, he has an xFIP that's 3 runs higher than what his ERA is, basically, and you know his left on base percentage is 100 at this point. So there's only one way to go, and it's down from here. The real stats for me that are kind of ones to watch for. He's at like an all-time low with a home run to fly ball rate. It's basically 5%, where for its career it's been 10. And, you know, that ballpark's more of a hitter's park from what it's played the past couple of years than it is a pitcher's haven. So I think once the summertime comes around, you can expect more of those fly balls to go over the fence, and then that's going to just spike up his ERA. His BABIP is super low right now. That's going to come back to what it normally is. Now, again, I agree with Matt where he's definitely a safe pitcher. He's one of those, you know what you're getting. And if he's your SP5, then, you know, or even your SP4, depending on
he's going to be bigger than that. His ADP was 320 this year. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I mean, as long as you have your expectations tempered that this isn't going to continue, you know, like Matt said, the strikeout rate was never anything elite, and right now he's basically striking out 6 a game. You know, the walk rate is kind of in line with what he's done his entire career. So, again, if you find somebody that's going to overpay for him, I think you do that deal 10 times out of 10. I just don't know necessarily what you're going to get for him. So just ride out the hot streak while you can, and then just, you know, when he comes back down to earth, he could be a guy. He could be one of those guys that like just floats around your league, and you have him on your team for a couple weeks at a time, and then drop him. I have no qualms about that. It just depends on the size of your league.
Sell if you can.
Yeah, but what are you going
for? What though?
Yeah,
I mean, what are you? Let's look at guys in his area before I even completely rip him to shreds. Guys who went around him. That you might be able to even get for him at this point. Michael Wacha went around him.
Depends how much you like to gamble there. I mean, Wacha is boom or bust compared to Santana.
But, I mean, you look at the level of competition Irvin Santana's pitched in. He pitched against the Royals, who have the 29th worst WOBA in Major League Baseball, and then 2 games against the Chicago White Sox, which ran me out multiple days in their outfield because they didn't want to put Trey Garcia's out there.
Do you know why those guys, the Royals and White Sox WOBA is so bad? Because they had to face Big Irv.
Oh, come on.
Ooh, it's a little chicken and the egg action there. I like that.
I'm just kidding. But I get what you're saying. Rest of the season, do you want Big Irv or do you want Mike Leake? Because they're similar.
I'll take Leake. Better offense behind him.
Okay, that's fair.
And in the National League.
It's like saying to me, do I want like moldy cheese or moldy bread?
But I'd rather have Tyler Skaggs.
Hey, with all those injuries now, these guys are relevant. So
yeah, no, I mean, that's a great point. So
give me Skaggs, give me Wacha.
Charlie Morton.
Oh, God, why are you just...
Garcia, I'm down on this.
No, Luis Severino.
I'd take him. I take Severino.
Jose Berrios, who isn't even in the major leagues.
He's doing work in the minor leagues, though.
Yeah,
see what happens. It's called up.
He's going to take a Big Irv trade in order for him to have an open spot in that rotation.
I've been trying to get Berrios in all my keeper leagues, but no one's biting. So good for them. They're smart. But
yeah, well. No, yeah. I mean, for me, like, and don't get me wrong, I like Irv, and I think Big Irv would be like, I know the Rockies have been talking about trading for. for Quintana. But for me, for a cheaper price, Santana's the better fit for that ballpark.
Agreed. I think the slider's better than Quintana's curveball. And
curves don't play well.
As long as he continues to keep the ball on the ground, I'm fine with that. Like, what's his ground ball percentage up to now? Like 48%? Fine. If he can keep it, if 50% of the time that ball gets hit in Coors Field, if it stays on the ground, fine. But the minute that he gets his fly ball, home run to fly ball rate up, that's going to be disastrous.
Yeah, but I mean, he's a guy who's been able to suppress home runs fairly decently. I mean, he's been under 10% the last three seasons prior to this one, and he's under 5% this year. Only
he hasn't had the pitching cores.
That's true. I mean, I think he's the kind of guy that, you know, he wouldn't be great. He wouldn't be a stud, but I think, you know, we were talking with Eno Saris on Friday and asked him about Quintana and potentially in Coors, and Eno's like, that would end up so horribly. And he talked about how, like, you know, the change not being, or the curve not being able to break properly like it can't in the thin air in Colorado would be disastrous for Quintana. So I've said since this offseason that the Rockies should trade for Santana, but we'll see if they do. Let's move on to a different guy, Chris Morero. He's not necessarily hot, and you may not have ever heard of him. But the guy who was playing in front of him, Jarrett Parker, crashed into the wall in San Francisco over the weekend and broke his clavicle, and it is probably out for the next 2+ months. And at this moment, the Giants don't have anybody else who can play left field, and so Chris Morero pretty much inherits the job. Especially until BJ Upton finishes signing his contract and gets back in shape. What are your guys' thoughts? I'll start with you, Jason. Any interest in Chris Morero?
I was actually going to say, is it until Angel Pagan signs his contract and comes back to San Francisco? I mean, in the deepest, like, if you're in NL only leagues, I think it's a guy that needs to be mentioned only because, you know, there's pretty much it's a body that's available that's going to play, what, 4 out of every 7 games, maybe, like, you know, but at the same time, you know, career minor leaguer, you know, this isn't a young guy. He's like 28 years old, going to be 29 in June. Never did anything really to stand out in the minors. I'm not that excited for him in shallow leagues. I think if you're in a deeper league, you know, then fine. But, you know, again, just keep in mind, this was the guy that they threw out there in the platoon with Jarrett Parker whenever lefties were on, and his splits against righties aren't anything to write home about. So, no. You know, that seals it for me.
Matt, any interest?
No, his previous major league at bats didn't come, were last in 2013 before this season. Bounced around with 4 different organizations in the minor leagues, which isn't to say that you need to write him off completely. You do need to know, because he is getting at bats right now, and in an only league, that's currency, right? I just think it's a temporary placeholder. He's not hitting right now in the limited at bats he's getting. And I mean, he's a quick search of him, and he pops up on 2009 Washington Nationals prospect lists and stuff like that. So in 2010. And that system at that time wasn't good.
Sure, Storin was on that list too, probably.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think with Morero, what you have is a really, really cheap DFS play against left-handed pitching.
Yep.
Oh,
yeah.
And temper that expectation too, because you're talking about a guy against lefties. I'm just looking at his stats right now. 233 batting average, 239 on base, 349 slugging. And that's against lefties. This guy is supposed to be a platoon guy, and those are his stats against the guys that he's supposed to be hitting. So,
I think what you may end up actually seeing is the Giants shifting Eduardo Nunez out into left field and playing Connor Gillespie.
Brandon Belt going to play the outfield at all?
I don't think so, but I mean, they've done it before. And I know they've talked about wanting to get Buster Posey more time, at first base.
Hundley's a better bat than Morero. So, I mean, getting him in the lineup, maybe Hundley plays first and then who knows.
They also got those, they have options in the minors. Like, who's that kid? Christian Arroyo, the
Christian
guy.
Arroyo.
You could bring him up.
I don't think they're bringing him up anytime soon. And he's not really an impact bat either. He's a better defensive guy. Yeah.
If you're
going to
move Nunez, if you're going to move Nunez to the outfield, it's just another guy that you could throw in there in the infield because he could play third, he could play short. They could, you can move him around and do things.
He's destroying AAA right now too. Not that it matters, but
yeah,
he's playing in Sacramento. So, all right, well, no interest in Marrero. Let's move on to someone that I think we're all going to have interest in. That's James Paxton, who has probably had the most amount of helium out of anybody coming into draft season, and he's so far proving why. Absolutely just carving up the league right now. My question to you guys is, where do you rank James Paxton versus other starters? Is this a top 15 starter right now, Jason?
You're going to love this. You ready for my hot take?
Mm-hmm.
This is my big sell high.
Mm.
Big sell high on James Paxton, and I got a couple of reasons for it. Now, there are some encouraging signs with him. His walk rate is down to the lowest it's been in his entire career. It's a full walk per nine below his career totals. He's never been a big guy that gives up a lot of home runs, but there are some sort of like there are some sort of trends that not in the short term scare me, but in the long term are things to watch out for. Ground ball rate is down like 12% lower than what his career average is. Obviously his xFIP is like 3 runs higher than his ERA. His BABIP against is 163. All these are going to trend in a different direction. I'm not sure necessarily when the wheels come off this bus, but keep in mind too, this is a guy who never was able to stay healthy, which is why he never was really like that top pitcher. And he's not a young guy. He's going to be 29 this year. So I think that this is a name that everybody looked at coming into drafts where it was on like a sleeper list. And right now he's performing, but I do think that this could potentially regress, and not in a drastic way, but you're never going to see him at a higher point than he is right now. This is a guy not like Irving Santana. This is somebody you can actually offer to somebody for like a slumping Corey Kluber along with another piece and probably get Kluber back. So for me, I think that this is the perfect time to sell him and get like maximum value back for him. That's my hot take for the week.
All right, Matt, what is your hot take for the week?
Not a hot take, but I'm kind of with you here. I think with you here, Jason. I think obviously in the years past, I think the biggest detractor for Paxton was number one, opportunity, and number two, health. And they kind of went hand in hand. I love what I've seen game-wise with the strikeouts and the walks, and I don't think those numbers are unsustainable. Do you guys? I mean, I think it's perfectly reasonable to expect 9.5 and 1.8. I think it's...
It's pretty in line.
Yeah, that shows growth. And I mean, yeah, he's in the perfect ballpark for his fly ball tendencies. But the thing that I like the most, and I might be putting way too much stock into this because it's two of his games out of three. His first two starts of the season were against the same opponent, the Houston Astros. They saw him twice in his first two starts. So what, 5-6 days? They saw him twice. He shut him down both times. 13 innings, 6 hits allowed. 13 strikeouts and 3 walks against Houston in the first two starts of the season. You'll take that any day. And I know he's got the health issues, the perceived velocity increase. We don't really know how to read those velocity numbers yet. Unfortunately, that's throwing me off so much for this year, by the way, the TrackMan.
What Eno said on Friday is you subtract about a half tick.
Okay. So the velocity is still up a little bit. No, it's actually down a little bit from 2016. I'm sorry. But, slightly. I mean, yeah, and he's still a lefty throwing 95. So, I mean, I guess he'll live.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing, like I said, was health and opportunity, and he's got the opportunity. Now, hopefully he can stay healthy. And the biggest predictor of past injuries and future injuries is past injuries. So I'm going to float offers out there with Paxton, but I'm not giving them away. I need to get an offer that's going to meet what I want. I'm looking for probably I'm going to shoot high. I'm looking for a top 30 bat. If I get that, I'll move him. If I don't, then I'm gladly going to hold on to Paxton and ride it out, especially in redraft formats where if he gets hurt and you might just end up cutting him with all the DLs, you know, because if he gets hurt, pitchers tend to get hurt for longer periods of time. I know that's not a really going on a limb when I say that, but it seems to be what happens with them. So if that happens, you know, you ride it out. You take what you got. What you get from Paxton this year is going to be 100 and If it's 160 innings, it's going to be 160 innings of really, really good stuff. So you'll take it.
I got an interesting scenario here for you guys. Okay, hear me out on this. The owner in, let's say an owner in one league has James Paxton. In on another team, there's an owner that has Edwin Encarnacion. Who says no to that trade?
I mean, if I'm the E5 owner, I say no. But
really?
Depends on roster concerns. I mean, first base is hard, but I still think I say no off the top of my head, yeah.
Okay. I thought that was interesting only because, like, you look at what Edwin's been doing to start off the year. I mean, not that, and that's not necessarily a panic move. That's one where there is, like, you look at some of the first basemen and what they're doing. Like, you know, look at a guy that we're going to talk about next, like Eric Thames and what he's doing. Look at, like, Greg Byrd. Look at guys like that that I feel like, even like Mike Napoli to an extent, I feel like there are guys out there that you can get. But if you find somebody that's believing in Paxton, that could be like that.
Still giving up on like a second or third round pick. He was the 26th overall player taken in NFBC leagues. Yeah. That to me just feels like too much of a stretch.
Okay.
Mean, if I've got Paxton and I'm personally, I don't want to sell Paxton right now. I think we saw these gains towards the end of last year. Love the velocity and control from the lefty. He's got one of the best offenses in baseball behind him. They improved their defense. I don't think there's any. I think if you're worried about injury, that is the only concern. Will he be able to give us, you know, 180 innings this year? His career high last year, 121 in the major league level, but it was 170, almost 172. You know, between AAA and AA. So if he stays healthy, I have no problem saying that this guy is a top 15 pitcher. And so if I'm going to sell him, I'm like, Matt, I want the moon right now. I'm looking to try to acquire a top 30 bat. I would be going after, yeah, I mean, offer the E5 deal because I'd be pretty stoked if I got that.
I don't think it's unreasonable.
I wouldn't do that.
Maybe like what about like an AJ Pollock?
There you
That's
go.
Who
That's
I
more
was
down
thinking,
the lines.
You know?
Yeah, like him. I mean, even like if you need a first baseman like a Jose Abreu, if you believe that he can overcome the early struggles and the batting average gets closer
or
to like 290.
Let's say you just lost Marcus Semien. Maybe Trevor Story, who hasn't started out very well.
Yeah, we were just talking about Trevor Story on our podcast. The encouraging stat with him, regardless of the cold start, is that the strikeout rate is down. So he's
he hasn't played most of his games at Coors.
Exactly. So, and you know, I mean, that's another target I would like to get.
Yeah. Let's move on to probably the hottest hitter in baseball and probably going to be my darkest moment this early part of the season.
I was all over him. Season.
Is this the rich old man that you promised me to have sex with? Is this the guy?
Yeah. You can have sex with Eric Thames all you want.
Oh, he's so hot right now.
Seventh home run tonight. You know, and right now his triple slash 405, 479, 1000 slug. I was down on him, and I'm not going to pussyfoot around it. I'll take my lumps. In terms of the power, I was wrong, and I'll say that. And I'm gonna get. Hopefully, I'll get more right than I get wrong. But I'm going to say it. I was wrong on Eric Thames being able to translate the power over to the major league level, because right now he's on pace to hit like 1.5 million home runs.
and that's a scientific fact. Ladies
yes,
and gentlemen.
Yes. Look that up. I work for FanGraphs. I know the numbers.
Oh, there you go.
So, Matt, you were high on Eric Thames. Why don't you go ahead and talk him up a little bit?
Just as I predicted, he has a 553 ISO. So.
And a 46.2 home run to fly ball rate.
Yeah, oh, that was we're going to Vegas after this. Come on,
it's
buddy.
Higher than that. It's
595. Well, that's because he had another one today.
Yeah, it's 595 now for the season. So,
Jesus Christ.
I don't want to shortchange him. No, I mean, I was high on Thames. I guess high, not nearly like this. Trust me. I liked him a lot just because my theory and Chuck said it better than I could in our Facebook chat today. But it was kind of the theory I had. I mean, after you get to guys like Will Myers, Jose Abreu, Matt Carpenter, and even Hanley Ramirez and Chris Davis, I mean, after you get in Carlos Santana, you get by those guys at first base, then you're dealing with Brandon Belt, who I'm not a big fan of, Adrian Gonzalez, Tommy Joseph, Mike Napoli. Why not take the unknown? Take a gamble. Because at that point, it's going to be your corner infield position or your bench, and take the upside gamble on Thames. It's pretty much how that was my strategy going in. And I have Thames in 4 out of my 5 leagues this year. And the one I don't is a 20-team dynasty, which I didn't even have a shot because he went number 1 in that draft. Just because it's not much coming in, and the team that had the number 1 pick was looking to compete. So they ended up snatching up Thames with the number 1 pick. But
And Aaron, in the Friends of Fantasy Dynasty,
he jumped
up, yeah, and took Thames. So
that's the one league I don't have him in that I'm in. So I'm very excited with the early season returns, and he's a guy I'm not looking to trade just because I don't know. Obviously, this isn't the upside; he's well beyond that. But
whoa! You think he's well beyond a like 12 homer per month upside?
Yeah, no, we're going on a limb. That's why we get paid the big bucks.
I mean, look, don't get me wrong. I was wrong on Thames, but if you're not trying to move him right now, you're absolutely insane.
I'm not. I'm actually holding him because I don't think I would take any offer outside of what we discussed for Paxton for him, and I know I won't get that, so I'm fine with that. I'm going to ride this out.
Wow.
I thought he was going to be a platoon guy. But he's getting all the at-bats against lefties. And today, Mike Montgomery is a real tough lefty for the Cubs. And he stayed back, had a nice at-bat, ripped a single to right center field. Like, it looked great watching him do that. I know that's one at-bat, but he's not having big issues with the strikeout. It's 25%, which 22.9 after today's game. Yes, that's still high, but
I want to see him struggle and readjust.
Yeah, so do I. And
yeah, that's the one caveat that I have for him is that you're talking about a guy that hasn't played in the major leagues in 3 years, and this is his first go round of major league pitching. The next time he goes back around the league, they're going to figure out ways to pitch for him eventually. Like this isn't like the next coming of like Bryce Harper here, where it's somebody ridiculously special. They're going to figure out the holes in his swing at some point. Sure. I mean, they kind of have to.
He's a must start in my lineup until they do. So
exactly. Now, here's my question, though. Like, and this is a legit question, only because of the surge of power that we saw last year. Over under 39.5 home runs this year.
Total.
Under.
I'm going over. Why not?
Like, well, here's the thing. I mean, let's look at some of the level of competition that he's hit these home runs off. Because, you know, as much as I'm saying I was wrong, he hit two off of Bronson Arroyo, two off of Tommy Malone, and one off of Zach Davies.
Well, what do those guys have in common? Okay, well, the one concern, well, Davies is on his team, so it had to be somebody else.
So's Malone.
One was off Cingrani.
But here's the thing. The question, that's a lefty, so that's encouraging. But the biggest concern with Thames.
It was Willie Peralta. It was.
Played. Hold on.
Was it Scott Feldman?
That's it. Yes. Right. Yeah. And then he played against the Rockies in opening week and opening series, hit one home run there. He had a game against Toronto. Yeah, it's been favorable opponents, but. The thing that is impressing me, like I said, he's hitting him against lefties, and you know that he's out hitting the platoon. And I had another point I wanted to make, but I can't remember it. So someone else talking, then maybe I'll pick it back up.
But I mean, he was getting platoon there for a minute because Aguilar was getting time.
The encouraging sign, though, for me. That's what puts him over the edge in terms of why I'm willing to take the risk and say this could be a guy that hit 40 home runs. It's a favorable ballpark, and if he's going to face lefties too, then. He's going to see over 500 at bats this year, right? Like,
yeah, you know. I remember.
But
he's only had
six plate appearances, at least coming into tonight. He's only had six plate appearances against lefties. He's not hit. I mean, they've been good. He's in 402 home runs in those six plate appearances. But I mean, he's only seen six plate appearances, 5 at bats versus lefties. That's not encouraging. And like, I know he's killing it right now, but. There's no way he keeps any of this up to any close to this regard. Like I said, I'm wrong. I was wrong. He can hit major league pitching, but he's not hitting very good major league pitching. And I feel like now you have to sell him and try to, if you could go out and get a guy like, I don't know, I mean, I don't think he can get E5, but I mean, why not shoot for the moon? You know, if I could get Will Myers, if I could go and get a Cespedes or Yelich, I'm doing that right now.
Right.
Go ahead, Jason.
No, I was going to say, I agree with that. But I don't think that, I think the point I was trying to make more is that when we've had such an outburst of power over the past couple of years, there's going to be guys that you're just not going to expect that are going to fall into 35, 40 home runs. I think he's just one of them this year. Like, we saw it last year with another guy on Milwaukee, Chris Carter. We saw it with, like, Mark Trumbo. We saw it with Robinson Cano last year. Now, granted, Robinson Cano is a much better hitter than Eric Thames is, but just
in
general.
Chris Carter is a much bigger power bat. I mean, Carter could hit 40 home runs in San Diego or in, you know, I mean, if got full-time playing time.
Yeah, I mean, but, yeah. I guess, you know, to your point, that's correct. I just think if the opportunities there where it wasn't going to be in the beginning of the year, we were projecting him to be a platoon bat where he was only going to play, you know, 400 at bats, 425 at bats, 450 at bats. Yeah. If you're going to give him another like 75 at bats, that could wind up being like another 6 home runs that we weren't counting on him for.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I remember what I was going to say. The question marks I was reading about Thames is coming in Korea. It's a lot of junk, and they don't throw very hard. And it hasn't been answered yet at this level because of the pitchers he's faced. None of them have premium velocity, and that's kind of what I want to see is him go against that. But only certain we're only talking about a certain tier of pitchers that can even do that on a consistent basis like that. So, I mean, if you look at PitchFX data, the average fastball speed he's seen is 92 miles an hour. Or 93 miles an hour, and then you got to do the like a half mile an hour adjustment on that. So 92.5, I feel like that seems a little bit low for league average. Mm-hmm. So maybe that question hasn't been answered yet, but I'm going to keep him in my lineup until he does because there's no way I can afford to take somebody out of my lineup on a regular daily basis that's hitting the ball like this.
Yeah, so the last thing that I just wanted to say on this too is that when you take into account the argument we brought up in the beginning of the show with the disabled list playing such a role, a prominent role with pitching rotations where you're getting these AAA pitchers shuffled in and out of like rotations. I mean, he might continue to hit against, you know, average to below average pitching. So that could, if anything, that's a little more encouraging just in general for the league, but especially for a guy like him, that's going to see an increase in at bats.
All right, let's move on. Talk about Mitch Haniger, who's also was a trendy kind of guy, sleeper guy that is starting off the year pretty hot. Matt, I know you were on Mitch Haniger just like me. What are your thoughts so far?
I like it. I'm surprised that the OBP being as high as it is, and I mean the 14% walk rate is going to come down a bit. The 26% strikeout rate probably comes down a little bit, I think, when he adjusts. But he might be that type of player. But, I mean, obviously the swing, you can tell with the Donaldson. He worked with Donaldson's hitting coach in the offseason a couple of years back, and he had a 1,000 or OPS in the minor leagues last year. So, I mean, him hitting isn't anything new. It's just being in Seattle, he's kind of hidden. And it's interesting he was part of that trade because, I mean, he might steer that trade into the Mariners' direction with him and Segura. But I mean, you look at, I'm glad they give him a chance. I think he was I think that a Rookie of the Year award's already wrapped up. It's already in Benintendi's trophy case. But if it was to go somewhere else, it would be Haniger. And that was kind of my prediction at the beginning of the season. He was my dark horse for Rookie of the Year. But like I said, it doesn't matter. That award's already won out there.
Which is a bunch of bullshit.
Because he plays the team he plays for. But I love Haniger. The one thing that I that's encouraging also is the 2 stolen bases. I know it's only been 13 games, but that's a pretty nice number. If you check that out, you know, to a whole year, you're pushing about 20 steals, and that's impressive value that you can add there. I know you can't do that per se, but in the Seattle system, there's nobody pushing it for playing time. Tyler O'Neill is the best prospect they got in the minor leagues, and they have a bigger hole in left field than they do with Haniger and Wright. So I think they'd go that route with O'Neal and Dyson platoon if they had to. So Haniger's about as safe as it's going to get for playing time, barring injury, and which is notable because he has a history of getting hurt. So that is something to pay attention. But you paid nothing for him this year in drafts, even though a lot of people told you to pay more than nothing. You still got him for nothing, so enjoy it because it's going well so far.
Jason, what are your thoughts on Mitch Haniger?
I actually just wanted to touch on a bunch of the points that Matt said too. The walk rate is encouraging. I don't know if it's sustainable, but it's definitely nice to. It's nice to see a young kid have like an eye where he's walking 15% of the times right out of the bat. Like that's just. I think that's just rare encouraging.
Now. It's really rare nowadays. Now everyone comes up and they have no plate approach.
Exactly, and the steals are also encouraging too, and especially like that they're. I feel like this is a team they're letting him run. I think that if he was hitting lower in the lineup, if he was like in that 6-7 hole, you wouldn't see it as much. But the fact that they're batting him at the top of that lineup, it's just it's encouraging to see that they're letting him run this much early on. It's just if this continues, that this could be a guy with with 15 to 20 steals at some point. And if he continues to hit 275, 280 with some power. I mean, that's like a top 25 outfielder there that you picked up off of waivers, basically. So, I do think some things will regress a little bit. Like you said, the strikeout rate, a little too high for my liking, but, it's not Aaron Judge level and you're getting the same amount of power, essentially. I think it's his job for the rest of the season. So I'm buying it. I like him. I think that this is... it's an intriguing young prospect on an interesting team. I'm totally looking forward to see how he's going to wind up playing out the rest of the season.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how he's going to do against left-handers. He's held his own so far this year, but it's only been 9 plate appearances, 1 home run, .250 average. They don't really have anybody to platoon with him because they sent Ben Gamel down. They already have to platoon Gerard Dyson. So, I think he's probably okay. Matt and I talked him up quite a bit this offseason. I think Matt more than me, but I definitely have a number of shares. And I'm excited because I think this is the kind of kid that could probably hit 25 home runs and steal 10 to 12 bases.
If you have
a decent average. Go ahead, Matt.
The most interesting thing I read about Haniger, if you have the BP annual, which you should because it's a great tool, kind of ironic now. The Arizona Diamondbacks essay in the front is by Nick Beccaro. He's their beat writer for the paper out there. It's about how players that have made sudden changes in their approaches, like AJ Pollock, Jake Lamb, and Gene Segura, and now he highlighted in this piece Mitch Haniger, which is ironic that two of them are now gone because they have a new sense of hitting style, I guess. Didn't mesh with what Arizona was trying to do, and they traded him. So it was kind of, and it was written when he was in a member of the Diamondbacks organization. Obviously, you can tell by the tense, and all of a sudden it adds on. Oh, Andy was traded, but like it's fascinating the approach he goes through. And if you watch video of him pre 2016 to 2015, it's a noticeable swing change. Different, like he has different jersey numbers with different minor league teams. You think it's two opposite players, and he's got more facial hair than one. He doesn't even look the same. You watch him, it's two different type of players. And I know you always read, oh, so and so's doing swing adjustments, but this was for real. We saw it in spring. We kind of talked about it in the prospect pod when we did. I think he was still on Arizona, and then we switched him and talked about him again in Seattle. Maybe I'm wrong, Justin. But
yeah, that's exactly right.
But it was. Notice what you have to watch. It doesn't do any justice. Just research and do some watch video. It's completely different. And you always read about, hey, someone so and so different approach. This is absolutely different. He is not swinging down on the ball like they teach you as a kid. When I don't know, that's how I was taught as a kid. Now it's swing up on the ball and hit the ball in the fucking air is what he's doing. And it's working because he's a big, strong kid, knows what he's doing. The hitting references in this piece are phenomenal. The Josh Donaldson piece with Mark DeRosa on MLB Network, watch that because it's essentially what Mitch Haniger is doing, and it's 100% for real, not to this level, but Mitch Haniger is not going away anytime soon. So
you know who he reminds me of at the plate a little bit, and this is going to sound blasphemous in a way, but I like he almost reminds me of like a young Paul O'Neill almost.
I can see that.
A little bit, and that's just the Yankee fan coming out on me. Yeah, that's the Yankee fan just having watched him for so many years. But it just they have that tall, kind of like lanky build to him, but like you could tell they're just still jacked. Like he's just there's just a way that they have at the plate, like their approach. It's just it's very similar in an interesting way.
That piece, I can't stress enough how interesting that is, because I mean they have like quotes from like the best hitters in baseball, like Mike Trout, and they ask him like what your hitting advice is, and Mike Trout says, "Oh, I just swing down at the baseball." But if you clearly watch video of Mike Trout hit, he doesn't do that. It's just subconsciously what he's been taught his entire life. You know what I mean? But he's not doing it. But he recommends swing down at the baseball, and he doesn't do it. They break it down in this piece. It's great, and it's what Haniger is. But and Haniger is doing the same thing as Trout in the way of swinging up on the ball. But he's telling you he's swinging up on the ball, and it's kind of old school versus new school. And that might explain why Haniger was traded a couple of times, because some organizations don't want you to do things differently than how they do it. I mean, Haniger was originally a property of the Brewers, and then he was traded to the Diamondbacks, and then he was traded to Seattle. So, I mean, he's been around the block a little bit. And I think players that are traded a couple of times get a bad rap.
Yeah.
And I don't think it applies here. I couldn't be any higher. We kind of planted our flag on Haniger this offseason in Friends with Fantasy Benefits. Yeah, we might be – I mean – I don't want to pound my chest like I was talking
there
about.
There were a lot of people in the industry doing this.
Yeah,
the same,
sure were. Yes, exactly. And I think he's showing the – saying all the right things and then backing them up. It's very, very encouraging.
All right, let's move over to some cold players. We're going to go through these ones a little bit quicker because we're already at an hour, and we still got four guys and two situations to talk about.
And I still need my old rich guy to come and come and have sex with me. So
yeah,
well, here's an old rich guy.
It's coming.
Here's an old rich guy right here.
Yeah, here we go. Zach Greinke, he is definitely old and rich, and he's starting out the season pretty shaky, reminiscent of what he did last year. Matt, are you getting tired of Zach Greinke?
Tired of him is, I don't know if that's the word I would use, but I still kind of don't know what kind of player he's going to be in Arizona. Maybe last year was it. And it's just because this year's kind of repeating it down to the FIPs within XFIPs within a tenth of a run, actual ERA is within five tenths of a run. So it's not very encouraging. The velocity is also down a little bit when you factor in the conversion. So that's not an enticing sign. It doesn't make you very excited. And the draft price you paid for him, I'm sorry, because you're probably not feeling too good about Greinke right now, and I honestly don't know what to tell you. You kind of have no choice but to ride it out with him.
Jason, what are you doing with Zach Greinke?
I mean, I wasn't in on Greinke this year. I think that the worst – I don't want to say the worst we've seen. I don't think he's this bad. I think that he's gotten unlucky in his first couple of starts, which is evident by the BABIP his XFIP being – about half a run lower than his ERA. I think that, you know, a lot of the other peripherals are the same. You know, he's still inducing almost a 50% ground ball rate. His home run to fly ball rate is a little lower than his career numbers. But he's not striking guys out. He's really not, you know, his walk rate is pretty much the same of what it was for his career. So, again, I think that you're not getting a guy that, like, you know, falls into that, like, top-tier SP2 range. But, I mean, he'll still probably wind up being somewhere in the top 25 to top 30 starting pitchers. So I guess if you're going to, like, look for a buy-low target and you can get him for, like, a song and a dance almost, then that's, like, just as long as you temper your expectations and you know what you're getting. You're not getting a guy that's going to be a top 10 pitcher. It's going to be more in the range of what I just described.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hold on and hope for the best. I mean, it's really, for the most part, just one bad start. I mean, his first two starts against San Francisco and Cleveland, they weren't anything to write home about, but, you know, gave up one earned run against Cleveland, two against the Giants. You know, I just don't think the strikeouts are going to be anything to write home about, and I think there are going to be some blow-up starts, you know, especially in Arizona or when he's on the road in like a place like Colorado. So I think he's the kind of guy you're going to have to, unfortunately, play the matchups with. And in that case, that's going to be disappointing because you more than likely he is your SP2 or SP3, depending on depth of league. And that's not necessarily what you paid for. The velocity seems to be fine. It's down half a tick, but he'll gain that throughout the season. I think... You know, he's getting a little dinked and dunked a little bit more than he probably should. A 346 BABIP is probably a little bit higher than it's going to be throughout the season. I think some of the underlying numbers are somewhat encouraging. I'm not ready to give up on Zach Greinke. I think he's one of the smartest pitchers in the game. Is always thinking about ways to get better. I think he will. I just think you're going to have to be patient with him, and you can't sell low on him right now for me. Let's move on. Talk about Greg Bird, who I keep putting on the list because I keep thinking Mike's going to show back up, and he sees the list and then doesn't show up that day. So he hit his first home run though since I put this list together. Jason, what are your thoughts on Greg Bird? Is he starting to turn it around?
Well, I liked Greg Bird in the preseason, and then he caught this draft hype where I was seeing him getting drafted like as, you know, like the 10th or 11th overall first baseman. And I was like, all right, this is getting a little out of control. Like, I mean, I saw him in some leagues get drafted ahead of guys like Eric Hosmer and Brandon Belt and like Adrian Gonzalez. And I was like, this is insanity. Because
oh, my God. I'm on NFBC right now.
Look at the guy right below him.
His highest overall pick in an NFBC league was 40th overall.
And that's just crazy. Like, I like him. When I usually draft my teams and I fill out my teams, I usually take if it's a league where I have two utility spots or two DH spots, I normally go one for power and then one for speed. So, you know, you take those end of the draft guys that have the upside to hit your 30 home runs. I think that's where this guy should have went, and he didn't. You had like a whole crew of people that were just like, nope, plant my flag. He's going to be my first baseman this year. And now they're looking at it where it's like, well, you know, what did you expect? And I think that he's, you know, the good news is that like he's probably going to wind up playing. I mean, five out of every seven games in that platoon, because it's now kind of turning into a platoon with Chris Carter there. He is playing a lot. And that's like an intriguing name in its own right. But I think that he's going to play the majority of the games in that platoon, but he's not going to be more than like a platoon. This isn't a guy like Travis Shaw who like was supposed to be a platoon guy and then outperformed his platoon. You know what I mean? Like, this is somebody who, like, I think that you're going to need, if you're going to carry him as your main first baseman, you're going to need to back him up with, like, a Justin Bour or, you know, maybe like a Mark Reynolds if you're looking for, like, a guy that has power. But if you drafted him for anything else in that, I just don't think it's happening this year.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Greg Bird?
Yeah, it's ugly. He hit his home run last Sunday. It would have been Sunday night against another guy we're going to talk about on this list soon. So I don't know if that's good or bad. But
it's not great for either of them, honestly.
Yeah, you look at Greg Bird. I mean, it's the strikeout rate's at 38%. Obviously, it's going to be a little bit higher. He did miss the entire season last year. And to be quite honest with you, he wasn't as good as he showed in 2014 or 2015 when he got the little 46 game cup of coffee with the Yankees. That's not his ability level. And the minor league track record has never been there to prove it. We've had this discussion on this podcast a lot of times, and I was a detractor of Bird. I didn't think it would be this bad, but the strikeout percentage, like I said, is going to be high. I missed the season. The one encouraging thing is the walk rate. He is hitting 138, but he's still walking at 14% of the time, which is kind of hard to do. Because he doesn't hit lefties, so they have no reason not to go right at him. But he is showing good play skills. I guess the strikeout rate is also probably coming from that. He's probably taking hittable pitches and finding himself in unfavorable counts. But with Bird, I mean, can you cut Greg Bird right now? I think you can. I mean,
I said you could last week, and I'm sticking with that.
Yeah, I think you can. I mean, there's options.
Especially in like a 10 or a 12 team league.
10 or 12 team league, yeah. I think you can.
I think in 15, deeper than you hold that. On. Yeah, exactly. 15 or AL only, you got to hold on and hope for the best. But, I mean, this is turning into a platoon. You know, Chris Carter started tonight, and it is not encouraging. I don't think that – I agree with Matt in terms of the power. I don't think that was ever going to be 25 to 30 home runs. I think he's more of a 15 to 20 guy, and that's even hard to do if you're only seeing the field – against half the time because you're stuck in a platoon. So I don't think there's a ton here to be encouraged about. I'm dropping Greg Bird in any league I can. And of course, the only league I've got him in is a 50-team NFBC draft and hold league.
Good.
You can't drop anybody.
I think this comp might be kind of crazy for you guys, but I think we figured out what Matt Adams' value would be if he played in New York, because that's what Greg Bird is. He's a line drive.
Matt Adams has more power, though.
He's a line drive hit tool guy over power, which Adams is too. Everyone thinks Adams is a big power guy. He's not.
He's more powerful than Bird.
Agreed. And yeah. And
I actually heard the comp that I heard, and I won't take credit for this. This was from Lenny Melnick. He came on our podcast and he compared him to Justin Smoke.
Oh, I think that's a little harsh, but
yeah, I can see what he's saying though. The cheap all or nothing kind of 225 with 12 to 15 homers and 400 at bats. I can see what he's talking about.
Yeah.
But yeah, better on base skills, but yeah, I don't mind that.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on. Talk about the Texas bullpen situation. Dyson goes on the DL today with a bruised ego. And they call up Keona Kella. But it appears that Matt Bush is going to start with the role, but they've said that he's not going to get every opportunity, just the majority of them, at least to start. What do you guys make out of this Texas bullpen? Is there a guy to own, and who would it be? Let's start with you, Jason.
I'm not a Bush fan. I've never been. I know that, you know, he's a guy that's, you know, he dials it up to 98. He also just was converted to be a pitcher, 2 years ago behind like a Golden Corral parking lot or something like that. Like, you know,
he's been a pitcher for a while. He spent some time in prison because of,
He was a shortstop, went to prison and came back as a pitcher. So, yeah.
I heard the story. It's a great story. It's one where it's like, you know, you want to talk about perseverance. Fantastic. But it reminds me of like Jake DeGrom, where Jake DeGrom was like a shortstop that got converted into a pitcher. And then just, you know, we saw it last year where when he pitched, he was fine. But, you know, if you're not a guy that like came up throughout like your entire minor league career as a pitcher, I don't know. There's just a part of me that believes that that has to affect it the way that your body breaks down. And it wouldn't surprise me if we start seeing that with Bush this year. I like Kella for what it's worth. I think that whenever I look at bullpen situations like this with Texas, with like what's going on in Washington and then the other bullpen that we're going to get to in a little bit, I look at it where I'm like, who's the guy with the most ridiculous upside? And I think that it's Kella. I think that Kella's a guy that like, only 24 years old, you know, came in 2 years ago, was throwing gas, like 97, 98 miles an hour, has the makeup to be a closer. And I think that, you know, for whatever reason was demoted this year. I've heard numerous reports on like behavior issues with him, but yeah, he's back.
Sort of seen,
he's kind of got that
in a B game spring training.
He's real life Wild Thing. And for Charlie Sheen, he's basically that.
Yeah, so I mean, that's the guy that I would target. Another dark horse just to mention is Jake Diekman. He won't be back until after the All-Star break. If then, I believe he has to get his colon removed or something like that. But apparently he's gearing up where he's going to come back after the All-Star break. Always liked his ratios last year. He had a nice K/9 rate for me. So just a name to keep in the back of your mind after the second half. You know, this might be a situation where the guy in that bullpen that gets the most saves isn't there right now. It could be somebody like Diekman. But for now, Kella would be my ad.
All right, Matt, who's your ad?
I'm staying away from this situation, but if I was to add somebody, I agree it's going to be Kella for me. He's got that mean streak. I like that for my closer. I'm kind of old school in that regard, I guess. It would be Matt Bush, but I'm fairly certain he probably can't go back to back days with the AC joint in the shoulder. I mean, that's kind of scary stuff for a pitcher. So
he did it all last year.
Yeah.
You got the same shot, was fine afterwards. So, I mean, I don't think there's any reason to be scared of Matt Bush.
I guess it comes back to your Masahiro Tanaka theory, then, if you think he's going to break. But you invested nothing in Bush as opposed to Tanaka. So, I mean, if you want to scoop up Bush, if you can add another guy, add Kela as well. If you're adding one, I guess go Bush. I wonder why Jeremy Jeffress is kind of getting no love in the situation.
Because he's been awful, and he has the same skill set as Sam Dyson.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with what Sam Dyson.
No, there's nothing wrong with this year. If you're gonna go from one, you know, crappy one sinker baller that's been crappy, why would you go to another? If Jeffress was pitching well right now, he'd be the answer. But he hasn't been. So I mean, they can't just go from one guy who's been awful to another. What does that say to your bullpen when you got two guys who've actually been really, really good this year, and Matt Bush and my dark horse, Jose Leclerc.
What about the walk rate for Leclerc?
Yeah, but I mean, you know, sometimes closers have, you know, walk rates. As long as he's not giving up home runs, which he hasn't at all, like, in the last 2 years, or last season, you know, whatever this season, yeah. And last year, you know, no home runs given up at the major league level. So, I mean, I'm buying in on Matt Bush. Leclerc would be the guy that I would put in money in a deeper format because, you know, an AL only, Bush is already owned, you know, and that's the issue I ran into in Fab in the CBS AL only league. So I Fab for $5, I think it was, I Fab Jose Leclerc. And, you know, if Bush's shoulder acts up, I think he could be the guy who is next in line.
Yeah, it's a messy situation. 142
ERA, a 154 xFIP, a negative 0.23 FIP for Jose Leclerc so far this year. He's absolutely killing it with a over 14 K per nine. So that's my dark horse. I just don't think that they're going to reward Kela considering the issues of maturity. You know, on the field earlier in the season. I don't think they're going to bring him up and throw him in straight into the role. I think they'll give other guys a shot first. Let's move on and talk about Johnny Peralta. Let's throw Peralta and Adam Wainwright into the same grouping since they're both Cardinals and have both been god-awful. Matt, you're Cardinals homer. Are you dropping these guys?
Yeah. Well, Peralta is definitely. I don't want to go on a whole rant and tangent here, but Colton Wong should play over Peralta, and Jed Drickel should play over Peralta. You guys all agree with that?
Like, I don't absolutely, know. Yeah. That was the point I was going
to
make too.
So I don't think anything else really needs to be said. Peralta should be a bench bat that can chip in at third and first base on off days. That's what he should be. He's showing nothing defensively. He's got fall down range at third base, and he is showing no power, and he's got no speed. So
that term fall down range. That's pretty awesome.
It's not conducive to a productive major league player. Adam Wainwright's an interesting story.
They're not going to take him out of the rotation.
No, he's a legacy.
Yeah.
Thing for them there. He's not going out of the rotation.
They may skip him a time or two.
He'll get the CC Sabathia treatment without like the alcohol.
You know what? Basically, you know what the weird thing is? Like, there was a debate with the Cardinals this spring. Well, who was going to start opening day? Carlos Martinez or Adam Wainwright? Like, it was an actual thing.
Yeah, like, which is crazy.
And it's that just goes to show you. So managers do, which managers rewarding loyalty. I actually don't have as big of an issue with that because I mean, you guys are your guys. They're what got you to where you think you are, and Martini thinks he's the best, so they got him to where they think they are. And but part of being a manager is adapting, and it's clearly obvious that Wainwright doesn't have it. I mean, the Achilles injury, I don't know how much of that's to blame for this. Last year he wasn't as bad as the raw numbers indicate. He had a couple rough months, but he was in the summer months he was really, really solid for the Cardinals in 2016. He does a good job of limiting home runs, not to this point this year. Obviously small sample size, he's been getting pummeled. The strikeouts are still oddly there, but he's the type of guy when he's striking out more guys, he actually does worse.
Mm-hmm. Well, because he's staying in the zone.
Yes, he's a cutter, and I always get scared of guys with cutters. He's a cutter curveball guy. Obviously, he uses the cutter and the two seamer to set up the curveball. Cutters are a touch and feel pitch. If you've ever thrown one, it's really difficult. You can never really feel comfortable with it out of your hand. And if you mislocate a cutter, it's basically a changeup that's faster, and it's always center cut, right?
Unless like, you're Roy Halladay.
Yeah. What you saw when Halladay went bad, it went bad.
Like, well, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think we're not seeing that yet with Wainwright, but I'm in 10 to 12 team leagues, I'm cutting him. In 15 team leagues, I'm holding on to him.
But I'm getting ready to cut him in a 30 team league.
You can't do that.
I'm thinking about it.
Who are you going to pick up?
That's the thing.
I'm going to leave an empty spot. I mean, it's he's killing me in all the ratios.
Dropping for Chris Carpenter. Like.
he'll be better, obviously, but I mean, it's just, I don't know how much better. I'm not very optimistic. I kind of was looking at Wainwright as a kind of what we described Urban Santana earlier on the podcast. I was kind of looking at Wainwright as that type of guy that can round out your back of your rotation.
Inning eater, yeah. I mean,
yeah, and not kill you, but right now he's killing you. So if you want to cut him, if you have other options, if you want to cut him, if someone dropped like Julio Urias is on the wire in a couple of small team leagues, which I've seen, because I would make that move now. Even with Urias not having a spot, like, I mean, that shows you how kind of down I am on Wainwright. 15 team league, I'm going to hold him, but it's literally down to his next start. If he doesn't give me a quality start, he's gone.
Yeah, and for me, he's NL only, and he's not even a every week starter in NL only. Jason, you want to throw your two cents on these two guys, and then we'll move on to the Baltimore bullpen.
I mean, the only thing I wanted to touch on with Peralta was that, like, there's not a guaranteed playing time every day for him, and I feel like that's the only time that he's going to be useless.
GM came out today, and actually, sorry to cut you off. John Mozeliak came out today and said, there's a very short lease with Johnny Peralta going forward. I don't know what that means, but take that for what it's worth.
Yeah, and I was never really a believer with Wainwright. I mean, look, the guy's a respectable, like, he's a veteran pitcher that's been in the league for years. He's won championships. I alluded to it as a Yankee fan. I think he just gets the CC Sabathia treatment this year. Yep. And Sabathia was a guy that, you know, in leagues last year was easily dropped and picked up and streamed. I think that Wainwright is, you know, you look at his underlying ratios and everything, it's just kind of, it's not in line with what he's done for his career. It's just a guy at the end of his career at this point. And I think there are going to be games this year where you're going to be able to stream him. It's going to have to be in favorable conditions. It's going to have to be in Dodger Stadium. It's going to have to be in Petco. It's going to have to be in, you know, in favorable parks. So you're not going to start him on the road in Milwaukee or on the road in Washington. You know, you're going to have to pick and choose your spots with him. He will be useful at some point this season. Yep. You will, you know, the other thing too is the more that this guy gets batted around, if you play in daily leagues, the cheaper his price is going to be suppressed. There's going to be matchups where he's going to be, you know, as your second pitcher, he might be a cheap buy. So, you know, just monitor him the matchups, look at projected game scores with him. But there's, in my opinion, there's just no reason to roster him unless you're in, like, the deepest of leagues or you're in, like, an NL-only league.
Yep. Let's move on to the Baltimore bullpen. Zach Britton hits the DL with the dreaded forearm strain, which nobody likes to hear. And Buck Showalter has said that he is going to mix and match guys. It's going to be some sort of committee. I think everybody is expecting Brad Brock, and if you saw kind of a lot of people's updates of their fabs in kind of the bigger stake leagues in NFBC or you know the Tout Wars, Labor, stuff like that, and Brock went for the most amount of money out of them. So Matt, what are your thoughts? Who's the guy to own in Baltimore?
I think it's Brad Brock. I think he's quietly been one of the best setup men in baseball for the last year and a half, 2 years. Look at the ERAs, 2.72, 2.05, and obviously he hasn't been giving up a run this year. The strikeouts are well over 10 per nine. This year in the small samples approaching 15 per nine. The walks are, you know, walks are kind of always going to be a little thing, but I think high leverage shut relievers like this with high octane stuff kind of have a tendency to walk more guys than maybe they should, but they make up for it.
And a great career strand rate of 80%.
Yeah, and there's something to that, right? If it's been for that long, I mean, it's not like he's super young. No. He's been around the block with San Diego. San Diego kind of turned out a lot of good relievers, Luke Gregerson and guys like that. They under the radar. But, I mean, he kind of fits that gig. So I like Brad Brock a lot. And a deep, deep sleeper is Michael Givens because he's another one of those Matt Bush conversions from shortstop to the mound. And he kind of slings it from the three-quarters delivery. He'll be real tough on righties. But I don't see any reason why Brad Brock shouldn't have the number one crack here. And I think he has the upside to be a top 15 closer the rest of the way if Britton is out for the season, which I don't think he will be.
Jason, who are you taking?
I was going to just make the case for Givens really quickly. I mean, it's, you know, elite K per nine rate up there with, you know, some of the higher relief pitchers over the past couple of years, you know, clocking in at like over 11 per nine. The one thing that's a little discerning about him is the walk rate, but it's down this year opposed to what it has been in years past. Not a big home run guy, you know, like, you know, home run to fly ball rate under five for his career. He gets lucky though. Like, you know, this is somebody who, you know, does put guys on base, but at the same time is an elite strikeout guy. So at the very least, I think if you're chasing saves, I always like to go with the guy with the high strikeout upside. So, you know, in this case, there's no clear win. You know, Bratch also has like that elite K rate. The other caveat I will say with this is that it is looking like Britton's not going to be out for a long period of time. It does look like this is going to be, he's traveling with the team this week. So that means he's probably going to throw a bullpen session at some point in time. He didn't say that the pain that he was experiencing in his forearm was more, I think he said it was more towards his hand than it was towards the shoulder, which, you know, indicates that it's not necessarily the dreaded UCL tear. So there's reason to be optimistic if you're a Zach Britton owner. You don't have to panic and go out there and, you know, blow all your fab looking for, you know, like somebody that's going to get you saves. So I think you're only looking at somebody in the short term right now. This isn't a situation like Texas where, you know, all bets are off for the rest of the season. This could be something where Britton's back within a week due to the, you know, due to the new disabled list. So just keep that in mind with any of these guys that you're looking to pick up. I'm not looking to drop somebody like a, you know, like a Fernando Rodney or somebody like that who's got, actually got a job for any of these guys in a Baltimore bullpen.
I think that's a really good point. For me, it's Brad Brock. I don't think this turns into a committee while Britton's out, and I don't know how long Britton will be out for. But I would say that he's probably going to miss maybe a little bit more than the minimum 10 days. But I don't think there's any way. Showalter's just so old school. He needs to know who he's going to leave on the bench in a tied game. You know, and so
I was waiting for that. That was good.
That is amazing.
So yeah, I mean, he's not gonna mix and match. He's gonna pick his guy. It's gonna be Brock, in my opinion. And I agree with Matt. If for some reason Britton is out for the entire season, I think Brock would be a top 15 reliever. And I think he's the kind of guy that once Britton comes back, you continue to roster. You just hold on to him, especially if you're a Britton owner. When I drafted Stefania Bell's Tout Wars team this year, I got Britton, and then I handcuffed Brock. One, because it's K9 league, but two, just because, you know, Britton was dealing with injuries in spring training, and you know he's a great reliever, but I think Brock would pick up the slack while he's gone. So, all right, that's gonna do it for us today. Jason, thank you for joining us.
Oh, gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me. And once again, check out fantasysixman.com where the first one's on the bench, and check out the Dear Mr. Fantasy podcast. But like I said, thank you guys for coming on. It's actually been like a treat to get to talk fantasy baseball with guys that know their stuff, unlike my two co-hosts. So
definitely, we'll definitely.
You're selling yourself short there. You guys have good stuff.
I know, and they all know that I bought their stuff. Do you guys know what Yancey's my nickname for Yancey? What it is?
I do not.
I call him the Janet Rossi of the fantasy baseball podcast, and then I call him the hashtag podcast slut because he just appears on so.
He's just a podcast whore.
Oh, he's on so many different podcasts. It's amazing he doesn't have like HPV right now.
That's awesome.
Did Corey Dickerson get a restraining order yet, or is that?
Oh my God! He literally cannot go one of our shows without talking about Corey Dickerson. So
for good reason.
These are the times you tune into the Dear Mr. Fantasy podcast, ladies and gentlemen, for Corey Dickerson analysis and anything you need to know about Miami Marlins, because that's what both of my co-hosts that's what they do. So
well, we'll definitely check you out over there, and I'm gonna I think Yancey booked me for sometime early June. So absolutely. I'll be on in just a little bit. Matt, why don't you tell people where you can reach and what you're working on?
Sure. MDTompFWFB. And just watching a lot of baseball, working too much here. Got a busy couple of weeks at work. And then after that, it's going to calm down. Constantly updating the prospect list. I don't know when I'm going to release it yet. Probably this month, I hope. And this is my last podcast as a non-30-year-old man, so
hopefully it goes well. Happy birthday, buddy.
Nice.
Yeah, I turned 30 in 6 days.
Congratulations. It's a wonderful decade.
Does the world end when you turn 30? Because I feel
well,
like
I hope it's not your last one, because you have a prospect pod on Thursday.
Oh, that's true. You're right. I do. So I take that back. My second to last one.
Don't worry, man. Jay-Z said it best. 30's the new 20.
Yeah.
You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFD. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can read all my stuff over at Fangraphs, where I do 4 to 5 articles a week now, or on friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Please give us a 5-star review on iTunes. It really, really helps us out. And if you do that, you will get entered in to win one of our free shirts, either Friends of Fantasy Benefits gear or some of the Rec Room gear that I've got. I've already given away one Friends of Fantasy Benefits t-shirt from Garrett in Austin, who actually hasn't still contacted me, so we haven't given it away yet. So hopefully Garrett gets a hold of me. And then I gave away a free t-shirt when I reached 1,000 Twitter followers to a gentleman. I can't remember his name, but he did contact me. So.
Nice.
Got lots of good stuff to give away, so please give us a 5-star review and get entered in to win that stuff. That's going to wrap us up for this episode. For Jason, Matt, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.